I've always wanted to be a doctor, but not to learn all the doctor stuff. I just want to be like a common sense doctor where someone comes into my office and says, I have a headache. And I say, well, why don't you just lie down and take 2 aspirin? Thank you, doctor. You're welcome. That'll be $300, please. That's the kind of doctor I want to be, an obvious common sense doctor. Doctor, my leg hurts. What part of your leg hurts, young lady? It's my kneecap. Well, why don't you just wrap it in gauze and put some Bengay on it and just massage your knee and let me know if that works. Take some ibuprofen also, because that would be helpful to it as well in relieving the pain. Okay, doctor, thank you very much. You're welcome, young lady. That'll be $400. Okay, my insurance will pay for it. No problem. What's my copay? Oh, your copay is $300. Okay, if that's what my copay is, and that's what my copay is. Thank you, doctor. You're welcome. Have a good day. That's the kind of doctor I want to be. That's the kind. Or a patient comes to my office and says, doctor, I've been having headaches for like 3 days straight. Well, it's probably a nerve thing. Take an ibuprofen. I'll give you an extra strength prescription for it, or you can get it over the counter. And I'm going to send you down to X-ray, and they're going to take an X-ray of your neck and your head just to be sure. Oh, thank you, doctor. I feel better already. You're welcome. That'll be $700, please. What? $700? Don't worry about it. Your insurance will take care of it. Okay, what's my copay? Your copay is $95. Oh, how did you arrive at that number? I made it up. Thank you, doctor. You've been such a help. You're welcome. Have a nice day. Bye-bye. 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 And then I would walk out to the front of my office and go, nurse, would you like to have some drinks down at the cocktail lounge? Oh, yes, doctor, because you're a doctor. Well, I'm asking you because you're a nurse. Isn't that a little sexist? I don't care. Insurance will take care of it. I guess you're right. That cocktail lounge is very expensive. They have very expensive drinks. I know. Insurance will take care of it. That's right. You're right. That's the kind of doctor I want to be. I want to be the kind of doctor, I'm in a movie theater, and someone is choking on their popcorn, and one of the moviegoers stands up and says, my friend is choking, is there a doctor in the house? I want to stand up and say, yes, I'm a doctor. And then everybody applauds. Wow, he's a doctor. Can you help my friend with the choking? I don't know. I'm off right now. I'm just trying to enjoy the movie. I don't really. I don't think I can help. Call 911. It's covered by insurance.
On the air everywhere. This is New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Yes, I do. Sort of, in a way. Hey, welcome to the program. I'm Ron Van Dam. Thanks for joining me. Okay, you can go now. No, stick around, I got stuff. Tell you the main reason I could never be a doctor, as much status as it does carry with it. You get to play golf every day, and I don't even play golf. I don't even like golf. I watch golf on TV to put me to sleep. But I guess if you're a doctor, you've just got to play golf. That's part of the deal, and that's why I don't know if I could be a doctor. You never hear a doctor say, I'm going to take the rest of the day off. I'm going to go bowling. You don't go bowling if you have to play golf. The other thing that
is obvious that I could not be a doctor is that I will not sit in a classroom and learn anything at this point in my life. I'm sick of it. I'm done. So I think to be a doctor, you have to go to like 50 schools. Like you graduate from high school, then you go to college, then you get your bachelor's degree, then you get another bachelor's degree, then you get your doctor's license, then you get a license to, then you got a license to be a doctor, and then you got to pass the bar or drink at the bar. But that's a lawyer. It's the same problem. There's just so much clout that comes to being a doctor, though. You know, like this is Madeline and her husband, who's a doctor. What other profession do you do that? Do you have a title like that? I'm Dr. Van Dam. I'm a doctor. You don't have that in other professions. What does he do? He's a radio broadcaster. Oh, really? Oh, yes. He's very, very... He's been around forever. He's very, very popular. Well, what's his name? Ron. There's no name. Yeah, okay. Is he a doctor, Ron? No, he's just Ron. He's just Ron. I want to have a title. I want to be a doctor. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being here. I've got a very interesting show today. I'm going to go from comedy to tragedies. That should be a trip. Oh, my gosh. I want to be a doctor. I want a title. But I'm not going to get one because I'm not going to be a doctor because I can't do it. I can't sit in a classroom. I cannot be told what to do one more time. I can't be educated to learn something. I'm done with that. I've done it. I'm finished. I won't learn anything else. There's no room upstairs. I'm starting to forget things. And the reason isn't because my brain is starting to fall apart. It's because I got no space. I got no space left. It's filled with mindless, stupid facts and concerns about things that never happened and all this kind of crap up there. And I got no more room. It's full. I have a seating capacity for brain cells, and I am full. I'm done. And they say, Ron, you know, when you get older, your brain cells start dying. Well, I don't know if they're dying or what's going on up there, but there's no room up there. I can't take in any more people. We're done. So I will never be a doctor. Very embarrassing situation yesterday, embarrassing only to myself. This is a true story. I'm not making this up. Ron, don't you make everything up? No. How dare you say that to me? Speak to a doctor that way. I'm just going to walk around saying I am a doctor and then let them prove me wrong. I'll do it for little, you know, no stupid reasons. Like if I go to a cocktail party, I'll be Dr. Van Dam. I'll say, Doctor, what are you, a doctor of medicine? Yeah, philosophy, one of those shit title things. Yeah. Can you imagine you go to medical school like for 17 years, or you be an attorney and you're an apprentice and you're a junior member and all, and you just, you're working for practically nothing. And you know, those are titles there. Like I'm Attorney Robertson or Dr. Robertson. But philosophy, the fuck is that? What is that? But you get to be a doctor. What? Yes, you can be a philosophy person. What is philosophy? I don't know. I don't know what philosophy is. What do you think of that steak last night? It was one of the best steaks I've ever had. You're a philosopher, man. A philosophy person just tries to analyze things. That's what I've been doing all my life for free. My brain analyzes no matter what. Do I need a degree? No. Can I get the title? Sure. I'm going to be Dr. Van Dam, Doctor of Philosophy. What does that mean? I don't know. What do you think it means? Oh, I get it. You turned it back on me. You are a philosophy major. Where are all the people who majored in philosophy? Where are they working now? Starbucks. They're all there. I thought, Ron, that was mainly kids. It is mainly kids. But if you see an adult there over the age of 40, that was a philosophy major. They used to be at Toys R Us, stocking shelves. But when the stores closed, the philosophy majors had nowhere to go, so they had to go to Starbucks. Figured they were going to get some coffee anyway, I might as well work there. And they don't turn you down at Starbucks either. They take you. They take you. They figure, yeah, we're going to have a high turnover. Take everybody. Take everybody. It's like a strip joint with bad taste. Take everybody. I don't care. I don't care. Yeah, put them up on the stage. I don't care what they do. Have they got body parts? Yes, they do. Put them up on the stage. Let them do it. I don't care. Nobody cares. Nobody cares anymore. Yeah, I'm a doctor, man. I'm a doctor of philosophy. That's what I am. So here's the deal. I had to have a blood test yesterday. I guess they test my blood to make sure it's still there. And it was, because when the lady pricked my arm, there was, and I'm not, no, no, you make your own joke. I'm not going to go there. A little blood came out, and I thought, oh my God, she's Nick DeVane. I'm going to die. But I am a doctor, so I knew better. So she takes blood out of me and stuff. So I'm on my way into the lab thing. And this woman is coming up from behind me to get through the lobby door as well. So I feel her approaching me from my ass area. So I open the door and I hold it open for her. Because why? Because I'm a gentleman and a what? Doctor. Thank you. So I open the door for her, and she's very thankful because I'm being very chivalrous. And she says, thank you, sir. And my immediate reaction was, what does that mean? What does that mean? So she goes in front of me. There's a second door to the lobby. It's like a vestibule. I know. I don't know who came up with that word, but it's a vestibule. And so she opens the door for me. And I say, thank you, ma'am. Now, she's about 23, 25 years old. Let's just say I'm older than that. Here's my problem. When she said, thank you, sir, when I opened the door for her, was she being, like, sarcastic? Because I took it as sarcastic, because when she opened the door for me, I said, thank you, ma'am. Sir, ma'am, you know, kind of a sarcastic, kind of joking kind of title thing. Or did she really mean sir because she thinks I'm a lot older than her and is calling me sir out of some type of age respect? I will have none of that. I will have none of that. You are not to talk to me in an age respect manner. You can fool around with me, but you can't do the age respect thing. Now, have we reached that moment in my life where I am looked at as the age respect person? Thank you, sir. And I call you sir because you are an ancient human being. Oh, no. Oh, no, 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 no. Here's the irony of the whole thing, and I think most of you can pretty much identify with this. Here's the irony. When I was like 18, 19 years old, I salivated to be called sir. I wanted the day to come where people would respect me and I wouldn't be a child anymore. I wouldn't be simply a pimple-faced teenager. By the way, I never had pimples as a teenager. Thank you. I waited till the day I was 21 or 20 or 22 or I looked like I was of age so that people would call me sir. I craved that independence respect moment. And I got it. Now, it's an insult. Now it's an insult. What I wanted is now an insult. Well, thank you, sir. Sir, why are you calling me sir? Because I'm old?
No, you're not old.
Then don't call me sir. Do you want to be called ma'am?
Oh, no.
Then don't call me sir.
Look, I'm arguing with myself. This is pretty amazing, isn't it?
Life is a, man, it's a ball of stuff, isn't it? Isn't it a ball of stuff? Isn't life a ball of stuff? Wow. One day you're happy, the next day, boom, you're sad. Then you're sad and something happens wonderful and boom, I'm happy. It's a roller coaster, man. It's a ride from hell. Also, a sweet ride. It's both.
A friend of mine recently, her father passed away. A long life and a very prestigious one. But sad, it's sad. And every once in a while, everybody is smacked with this realization of losing your parents. And if you have parents, it's going to happen to you. It's the natural progression. You cannot escape it. Remember, death and taxes, you can't escape them. You can actually escape paying taxes. You may get caught and imprisoned, but you really don't have to pay them until they catch you. Death, no way around. No way around it. And yet, it's an agonizing, horrible, horrible experience. And we don't think about it, and we don't talk about it because it is so horrible. So I thought it'd be interesting to speak to an author who has gone through this, but in a more extreme manner. It's one thing that we all know that someday, you know, there is a finite situation. But when you have a child and the child is young and hasn't lived their life yet and an accident occurs and they pass, that's got to be, you would have to be there to even feel, even begin to feel that agony and tragedy. And how long does it take for it to go away? Does it ever go away? How do you deal with something like that? So our guest today is an author that actually wrote a book about what she went through as far as grieving is concerned. And everybody grieves. Everybody grieves. So I thought it'd be interesting. So yes, I know how to definitely bring a show down. Well, Ron, you were very funny in the beginning of the show with your little stories about Sir and how you wanted to be a doctor. You were very, very funny and humorous, and I enjoyed it. Now, what are you doing to me? Now, what are you doing? Now you're going to talk about people? No, don't do it. Look. I've always prided this show on being a little bit of everything, and that's what's happening today. So we're going to speak to our guest at this exact moment. Cheryl Hazer joins us now. She is an author and has written a very interesting book, Walking at the Speed of Light, Reflections for Following Jesus in Grief and Joy. Interesting book. I assume that there was a reason for this for you to pen this book.
Definitely. My youngest son died at age 33 mm-hmm. in a car rollover, and he was flown to a hospital at Great Falls, Montana. We drove 300 miles to get there. Talked to the doctor, and 2 hours later we're told that Josh was brain dead. We went through a number of things there, including organ donation, and then I dealt with grief and depression after that in a major way, and eventually came to the point where the healing began. I was finding light instead of darkness, and that was the inspiration for the book. It's not a memoir. It begins with Josh's death and some details about my experience, but the majority of the book is short chapters, which are reflections to help people think about different aspects of light and how that applies to darkness in our lives of any kind.
We all go through grief in our lives. Parents pass, and it's, for many of us, our first introduction. I assume that what you went through, as far as grief is concerned, was light years different than the passing of a parent, I would assume, because this was unexpected and tragic. Am I right in that assumption?
Oh, very definitely. There's, you know, the sudden loss of someone, and particularly a child, is a very, very difficult thing. We did learned some things. Well, our daughter did a great deal of looking into sibling grief, and we realized that she also was dealing with his, sure, this in a very, a strong way, simply because, well, what she said to us that she had read was that parents have a life before they have a child, but in the case of a sibling like her, right, no part of her life, true, had ever not had Josh in it.
Wow, I never thought of it like that. That's incredible. I never looked at it like that. Wow. Obviously, grieving takes time. Many people, I would say most people, don't even really properly grieve, if there is such a term. They deal with it forever, and things can even get worse and darker. But you found that after a period of time, you found that the opposite was the case?
Yes. I just realized that the only antidote to the type of darkness that I was dealing with, and beyond grief into real depression, mm-hmm, that the only antidote to that is light. And I had grown up with the concept of the light of the world, and I thought about that, and I've realized since that what was happening through a return of my faith and so on was a change of focus, far more forward thinking, far more living the way that Josh would have wanted, mm-hmm, my husband and I to live, and also a return to some resilience, that inner resource that helps us to get through things like, mm-hmm, death and disaster and depression, but also helps us emerge on the other side stronger.
Yeah. I assume also the time heals wounds, not all wounds, as is in the phrase, but certainly gives you an opportunity to reflect without the blinding emotion of it. It sounds like, even when you were talking about depression, which is an obvious result, that even with depression, that your brain was telling you this isn't the right thing to do.
Yes, very, very definitely. And that's a good deal of the reason that I wrote the book. Mm. I had a good friend that was a kingpin in AA, and he made the comment that when we use things from our journey to, mm, help other people, then God's grace flows not only into their lives, but back into our lives as well. And so the purpose of the book has become to share some ideas that might help somebody, mm-hmm, else get through this kind of thing.
Yeah. It's interesting that you refer to Jesus actually in the subtitle of your book, and you refer to God within the pages of the book. And even if one doesn't share that religious strength, there are other facets of it that they can relate to, such as spirituality. Your reference to the light is certainly very universal. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that of a certain religion, but it can be simply a spiritual type of strength, so to speak.
Yes, definitely. I think that, people, everyone grieves in a different way.
In a different way, yes.
And for a different length of time, mm-hmm, and people find their healing in different ways. My husband has strong faith, but, mm-hmm, he's an old-fashioned cowboy, very hands-on guy, mm-hmm, and he has found so much healing in just having, he has the horse that Josh was training and uses him all the time, and he has Josh's old pickup, he has Josh's saddle, and so there are some hands-on things for him that really helped with me. Yeah. Part of the healing came through writing. And so people can, yes, they can find that strength in different,
yeah,
ways.
There are a few interesting things that I wanted to note here, what you're doing in a very positive way, is that if someone could return from the other side, they would almost inevitably say to you, I don't want you to spend the rest of your life in pain. Please don't, my passing is not supposed to ruin your life. It is, it's, you're supposed to have the strength to move on, and I'm telling you to do so, that I'm okay. That's what they would always say. And yet we, you know, we still grieve, but that would be, I assume that would be the message from everybody that passes on.
Oh, very definitely. Very definitely. And I wanted to say a word about organ donation.
Yes.
People, you know, they think of the major organs. There actually were more than 100 people that were affected by, Josh, things like people not having to have amputations because of implantation of his veins and so on. And the other factor is that some organs, the heart, liver, and lungs, are size specific. Josh was a really big guy. He was 6'8" He was in 250 there were people, you know, large men who wait on those lists a very, very long time for donation. And we correspond with the fellow that has Josh's lungs. And then at one of the gatherings of Life Center Northwest, that's the organ donation center, we met the fellow who has Josh's heart and actually listened to that heart through a stethoscope. And what a life-affirming thing to realize that this other young man who was close to death now has a very good, very active life because of Josh's heart. And so there are, it's just a reminder that whether people, whether there's organ donation or not, people live on, their influence lives on, the good things about them can live on and affect other people's lives.
Wow. What a trip that must have been to hear his heart beating. That's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible. Yeah. Wow. What a great story. Yeah, the last thing I wanted to say was you're doing something wonderful here, because at times of grief, and even when someone's very ill with a disease, you always seek out other people that, that have the same experience so that you know you're not the only one going through it to that extent, and that there are other people and there's a community of people that can share your experience. And that's kind of what you're doing here with the book. You're sharing your experience with other people that are looking for some type of answer.
Yes, definitely. And I also do programs, and they've been with a variety of groups, including Compassionate Friends, who are all people who have lost children.
Right. Good for you. Where can someone hook up with you and hear your works and your activities?
Well, first of all, the book is available through bookstores and online bookstores and so on, and also as an e-book. I do have a website. It's CherylJHazer.com, CherylJHazer.com. It includes a blog, and it includes contact information. If they'd like an autographed book, why, obviously, I can send one. But it also gives, you know, different outlets that they can get the book through.
Perfect. Walking at the Speed of Light, Cheryl Hazer, thank you so much for your time today.
You're certainly welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well,
there you go. There you go. Hopefully that's been helpful to some of you. As I said, when you feel like you're not the only one, it doesn't solve it, but it makes it a little bit more understandable, I suppose, although there is no understanding that. Hey, this has been quite an experience we've had today. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new show, and I promise I'll keep you on a higher level then. Until then, I wish you peace.